meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. If you had a chance to listen to my daily commentary today at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, you will have heard me say something like this. Could you imagine the nightmare of having your child sexually abused, raped, sodomized by her allegedly raped, sodomized by her stepfather, going through the grand jury process, investigations, statements, all that sort of stuff. A little bit later on, that young child is taken from you, killed in a car accident. Then all of a sudden, court comes along, and the person who is charged with allegedly raping and sodomizing your child's lawyer jumps up and says, sorry, this shouldn't go any further because my client has a right to confront his accuser. We all know that there are cases where, well, in murder cases, obviously, the victim can't speak. The evidence has to speak for the victim. The investigation speaks for the victim. You have handicapped people. You have the deaf, those that can't speak for themselves. But now, all of a sudden, there's a case, and we're going to follow this up all evening tonight with my first guest, Deputy District Attorney from Los Angeles County, Robin Sachs, who specializes in these types of prosecutions. Becca McAvoy, case is one that it just makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And we're going to talk to a crime reporter from a CBS station, WKRG, in Mobile a little bit later on, and then we're going to talk to Becca's family. And I want you to do this for me tonight, and I don't ask this often. This is a story that needs bigger national attention than what I can give it. Listen to it. It's tragic. It's horrific. In fact, there are two cases like this. One of the families doesn't want to talk about it. Same area, but this family does. So two cases, two young children allegedly raped, then taken in traffic accidents, in deaths, and all of a sudden their lawyers are trying to get their clients free because they think that they don't have to go any further because they have a right to confront their accuser. It's just nuts. Robin Sachs, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm good, but I find this case totally disturbing. Now, I do understand some of the law, and there's a case that's being argued right now, Crawford versus Washington. The family came to me with a headline email saying, Jessica's Law, something that we talked about many times on my program, in interviewing Mark Lunsford and all, on all, saying Jessica's Law is not enough. Here's what's happening to us. And I just found it absolutely crazy. It's just absolutely nuts. But there is a chance, and the family has even heard from the prosecutor, that this may disappear and this pedophile, this accused pedophile, will walk the streets. I gave you a little bit of heads up on this yesterday to get you to maybe research a little bit. I want to talk about this. Am I imagining all this? Is this case as crazy as it sounds?
Well, actually, the Crawford case does exist, and it has created definitely some hurdles that were not there before in terms of the ability to use the hearsay statements of a victim or someone who is no longer available that would have been admissible at some other point. The decision, though, what needs to be understood is that the requirement under Crawford is that there is an opportunity for the defendant to confront and cross-examine his accuser.
Right.
What the decision, though, says is that in jurisdictions like Los Angeles, for example, that files a great number of their complaints by complaint and as opposed to a grand jury testimony, if there is a preliminary hearing and the victim testified at the preliminary hearing, that would have been considered the right to confront and cross-examine the witness, and therefore, if Rebecca McAvoy had been killed in a car accident here after the preliminary hearing and was deceased, that testimony would be admissible because the defendant would have had the opportunity to confront and cross-examine the witness at that point.
I'm going to, and the family won't mind this, but I'm going to read a little bit of an email that they sent me, which they have given me permission to share with you. And it says very clearly, I'm no lawyer, and I'm having a hard time interpreting some of these words in the law. I'm just a housewife and a mom. Please help. I appreciate what you're doing for us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This, you know, first of all, the alleged rape and sodomy, and then going through, and I'm not sure what it is in Alabama, if it's a preliminary hearing process, a grand jury process, whatever. The father or the stepfather at that time, Bill Engel, was a Chickasaw police officer. And when he was charged with the rape, and so the stigma is just incredible. And then to lose the child in a traffic accident, and now to go through this, Robin, you know, it sounds like this family is grasping. They want to do what they can to try and help the case. You and I both know from being involved in these sorts of investigations professionally and how we report on them. You as a news analyst and as a prosecutor, myself as a police officer and a show host, that ultimately the judge will decide. I think this has been adjourned now till the 22nd of April, but it's the whole trust issue in the law. This family is just so afraid now that this alleged rapist who is walking the streets right now will walk free. You know, we talk about mandatory minimum sentences, but this is something. And this girl did testify in a prelim or a grand jury process. They're just so afraid that he's going to be walking the streets, and they just don't know what to do. You're handling this case now. How do you approach this? Robin, I think we have lost Robin Sachs. It's going to be one of these nights because it's such an important program that I can see problems starting. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back in a minute here on the Dana Pretzer Show talking about Becca McAvoy. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Yes, we are back, and I think we've corrected our phone problems. We have Deputy District Attorney from Los Angeles County and from Women in Crime, Inc. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Robin Sachs with us. Sorry about the phone connection problem, Robin. You're there now?
I am here.
Now, I was talking, and I shared with you a little bit, and I'm not sure if I got cut off or you got cut off when I shared a little bit of the email some of the family sent to me about this case. And I asked you, all right, this is your case. The national media hasn't grabbed this yet, and I wish they would because I think this is a huge issue. DAs like to try their cases not in the media, but yet the family is going to the media saying, please help. What do we do? We're terrified. We've gone through enough hell as it is. How do you handle something like this?
Well, this is actually the prime case of where we would want the media in as well, because it puts a little bit, if there's a little bit of room for discretion in any court, certainly a judge will feel it when the media is involved. And it's not actually trying the case necessarily in front of the media. It's getting the case to be tried that we want the media in this case. But if I'm the prosecutor in this case, and I'm, and this is all I do is sex crimes, the first thing I would be looking at is, you know, I would in no way feel like this case is dead in the water. I would want to see what other corroboration, and can we prove this case even without the statements that Rebecca may have made earlier on, i.e. DNA evidence, other victims, the mom, and other things that can at least piece the puzzle together and get in the fact that Rebecca's not here because she was killed, and at least be able to prove the case circumstantially that way.
There's something that in the law is called excited utterance, you know, or a statement that is blurted out or something that the victim comes forward and says that also is applied to those that are accused of something. Someone comes up to a policeman, the policeman knocks on the door, and they blurt out a statement before they're given a chance to get their Miranda or their charter in Canada. Those types of things could be looked at in a case like this because, you know, obviously, sadly, the victim is not with us anymore.
Well, first of all, there are basically what you're talking about are excited utterances is one exception to the hearsay rule. Basically, any statement that anybody makes out of court is an excited utterance. So even if you and I were involved in a lawsuit and we were alive tomorrow, anything we're saying right now would be hearsay tomorrow.
Right.
So we would look for one of any number of exceptions that we could apply in order to get it in. Excited utterance is one of them. In Rebecca's case, we would probably want to look to some of the official records or statements made for medical treatment, statements made under certain circumstances that would, where her unavailability would allow it in. The issue is, though, if it is in fact serving as testimony and being testimonial, and there's never been an opportunity to confront and cross-examine, there's that the Crawford runs interference on that.
When I talked to the family, and I recorded an interview with them yesterday, which I'll air a little bit later on this evening, and I'm talking to them about the system, and I'm explaining to them, you know, it's a good system. It's a system that we have now that we trust and we believe in, and we try to do the best we can. Now, that's almost rehearsed sometimes as far as a prosecutor or a police officer investigator goes, but there must be, so much hurt with this family, so much sitting on pins and needles and almost a mistrust to know that the person that did this allegedly to their daughter may walk free. That's got to be something, too, that you as a prosecutor have to deal with, and it's got to be so difficult. Your thoughts?
Yes, it's difficult and it's disgusting, probably not just for the retribution for what's happened in the past, but the incredible amount of danger that this man poses to children in the community upon release. If I'm the DA in this case, perhaps getting some sort of plea or some sort of sentence, this is where we may want a plea bargain and look for a lesser deal so that we can secure the conviction, so it at least sets the defendant up for the next time, because as a predator pedophile, the one bit of solace for the family is that there will be a next time, unfortunately, and hopefully at least Rebecca's reporting and history and information will make the case clearer for that DA.
Is there a Jessica's Law in California?
Yes.
Mandatory minimum sentences is what we're talking about as far as Jessica's Law. And Jessica Marie Lunsford was murdered, and a fellow by the name of John Cooey was held responsible for it. But yet all states, Robin, don't follow the Jessica's Law. They say that mandatory minimum sentences don't work. And it just drives me nuts. I've had Wendy Murphy on the show, one of the big proponents of it, several times, and we've talked, even Mark Lunsford and I have talked about this. When you have something, a mandatory minimum sentence, and it prevents, and the whole rehabilitative aspect as far as sexual predators goes, we can talk about that, and I'm sure you and I are on the same page, is it's not, you can't rehabilitate them, it's just doesn't work, but the mandatory minimum sentence is so important. What do you see, and you may not be able to comment as far as California goes, but what do you see or what would you like to see as far as changes in the law? The family of Becca McAvoy are petitioning the government and trying to do what they can as far as changing the law in Alabama, is where this happened, to protect the children, to make sure that in cases like this, their statements that either came in a prelim or in a grand jury can stay in. What would you like to see? Is it time for that that case that we've stated a couple of times to go away, or is that a guaranteed protection for those that are accused to have a right to confront their accuser?
Well, your question is twofold. I'm going to address the mandatory minimums first so you just understand one thing. There's always a ability, despite the word mandatory minimum, it's almost like a life without parole, and all of a sudden there's a parole hearing, and you're like, wait, I thought it's life without parole. The fact is mandatory minimum sentences, one of the problems is that there is still a little area of discretion depending on how cases get either resolved by a jury or resolved by a court by way of plea, that gives the court, the DA, and any of the players a little bit of room to get out of the mandatory minimums. For example, in California, one of the mandatory zero discretion is if a defendant is convicted of molesting two victims and those charges are proved. Well, if the jury only comes back on one victim,
right,
there went the mandatory minimum sentence. And a lot of times juries, for example, in their guilt and inability to be able to look at the evidence and state of the law, feel like, okay, well, we'll split the baby, we'll find them guilty on one and not guilty on the other, and the jury effectively gives the court the discretion to get rid of the mandatory minimum.
This is a story again, and we're going to continue following it up, and I hope you'll join us after the 22nd of April to talk about it more. But this young girl, Becca McAvoy, her family deserve justice, and we will do what we can to help that. We've got about 5 minutes left. Robin Sachs, Deputy District Attorney from Los Angeles County, is with us. And initially, when I booked Robin on the show tonight, Robin is one of the contributors to the wonderful crime blog, Women in Crime, Inc., and I saw a story on there Robin wrote about the presidential candidates of McCain, Obama, and Clinton, and their position on crime. You know, we've heard everything that we've can in the news. A lot of it's nonsense. But we haven't heard a lot about their position on crime. Anything from, gun control to capital punishment to drugs to whatever. And I thought I'd talk to Robin about the excellent article that she wrote on Women in Crime, Inc. about that. And let's just go down the list, Robin, and talk about capital punishment, which is, everyone has their own beliefs. I'm a strong believer that, having one of the best deterrents is knowing that what the punishment will be, and if you don't have a strong punishment, then that's not a very good deterrent. That's my personal opinion, but I'm curious what the presidential candidates think.
Well, and as you nailed it on the head, it's so interesting that in this time where the election is so heated, you have no clue to where they stand on what I think is the most important issue out there, and that being crime.
Absolutely.
The first thing I'd like to say in terms of all of the areas, there is very little difference between the candidates, which I find to be really, in one way, very pleasantly surprising. However, my guess is by the time we get out of the primaries and into the general, we'll start seeing a greater difference in between the candidates and the parties in terms of crime. But in terms of capital punishment, both Clinton and McCain support, and Obama support capital punishment, but it's all in the spin in how they determine and discuss their support. Clinton is a supporter of the death penalty. However, instead of saying that out loud, she focuses on the Innocence Protection Act that she chaired and really promotes legislation that will help ensure that we have the right person should we use capital punishment. Obama, on the other hand, says that he believes in capital punishment when there are, in specific cases, very serious, heinous-type cases, for the examples that he's readily admitted to supporting, that being mass murder, rape, murder of a child. When looking at his actual record, in terms of what he did when he was in Illinois, he allowed that 13 death row inmates were exonerated due to racial bias, police tactics. And so he focuses really on the racial issues. And of course, Senator McCain supports the most broadened use of the death penalty and has voted yes to limit death penalty appeals so that the process isn't hashed out any longer than it should be.
And you're so right that the networks haven't been covering. I'm sure the candidates have talked about it, but the networks certainly haven't been covering it. We've got about 3 minutes left, Robin. Something that you and I were just talking about as far as mandatory minimum sentences, as there's also another way to explain that is calling it a repeat offender sentencing. And I'm curious what the three candidates think about that.
Basically, they all support the three strikes and sentencing, or anything that allows for lengthened sentencing. I think that it would be extremely unpopular for any of the candidates to come out and say, "Hey, I'm soft on crime. If you're a repeat offender, that's okay." But no one's going to really even admit to saying that. So instead of focusing on that, you can look at just in between the lines and how they voted in the past and the language that they used. Basically, McCain comes out with very strict sentencing guidelines for repeat and violent offenses, period. That's it. That's what you get. That's how he's voted. Clinton believes that mandatory sentencing is too widely used, so she doesn't like the idea of judges having to be locked into any kinds of sentencing, but does support three-strike legislation, particularly when it's in a violent case. And Obama's concern, which runs across the board, and all of his concerns when it comes to crime, is that the repeat sentencing and mandatory sentencing tends to be a racial issue where there's more racial profiling and more of a potential to have disparities in sentences when you have a person of a particular race. So while he believes in strict sentences and having and repeat offenders being sentenced for longer periods of time, he wants to promote fairness in the system where there would not be racial inequalities.
And, you know, again, hopefully it's something that we'll see more of as the campaign continues. Robin Sachs, Deputy District Attorney, Los Angeles County, my go-to person for all things legal. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to be back in a minute, and we're going to continue our discussion tonight into the tragic case of Becca McEvoy. Her alleged rape, sodomy, her death, traffic accident, and now the trial of or the continued court proceedings of Bill Engel. He's a former Chickasaw police officer who was charged with her rape. And I'm going to bring on WKRG-CBS reporter Jessica Taloney, who's been covering the case and doing an excellent job. She was at court yesterday, and you're going to be shocked to hear what she has to say about this case. This is something that needs to be looked after. It's almost taking the words away, because I'm so angry when I hear about this, that does the accused have a right to face his accuser, even though she has testified before, and even though her life was taken tragically in a car accident? Will he walk? Will this pedophile, alleged pedophile, walk? We'll see. We'll be back here in a minute on the Dana Presser Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. In just a minute.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Presser.
Okay, we're back. I have with me Jessica Taloney. She's a reporter for WKRG-CBS, and she's been following this Becca McEvoy case. She was in court yesterday, and it's not often that I'm at a loss for words. So if I, you know, I'm just so angry over this case, and we've talked, you know, a good part of the evening already with the Deputy District Attorney from Los Angeles who specializes in these types of prosecutions, and I wanted to go right to the, the source of the news, and Jessica's here to join us tonight to talk about it. Welcome.
Thank you, Dana.
This is something I'm sure in your time as a reporter, and I've seen your coverage of this case, and you're doing an excellent job. The family says great things about you, that it just must make you shake your head.
I tell you, there's no doubt about this one, Dana. This is one of those cases that just reaches out and grabs you, and you just want to see it come to a resolution. You want to see this come full circle and justice be done. Whatever justice is in this case, you just want the opportunity for justice to play out, and that's what has you shaking your head, is because you're not sure you're going to see it this time.
Well, you know, I've covered, you know, in my 11 years of doing this radio program, and as my, I'm in my 25th year as a police officer, and I've seen case after case after case like this, and your heart just cries out for the victim, and you try to do the best job that you can. But this is, you know, they've gone to hell and back several times, and now they're looking at the possibility of the alleged rapist here walking free because of this Crawford versus Washington ruling. I want to go back a little bit to you and your coverage of the case and your appearance in court yesterday and exactly what happened. I'm going to be interviewing the family after you tonight. So I actually pre-recorded an interview with them yesterday, but I'm curious your thoughts on what happened in court yesterday.
Well, then I started covering this case about a month ago when Rebecca McAvoy's family called our station for help. It was about 2 months after Rebecca died in that car crash, and the hearing to determine whether there was enough evidence to move forward with the case had already been postponed twice.
Right.
Well, the rescheduled date, of course, was April 2nd, which was yesterday. And I tell you, going into the courtroom, not just myself, but reporters for other stations here that have been covering it as well, we all really did think there would be some kind of an answer when we came out. And to watch it, listen to the discussion, and it was just a legal argument back and forth. And when we came out and it was delayed again, it really was surprising. This Crawford versus Washington was a case that prosecutors say had not been brought up before. This was the first time they say the defense had mentioned it, and they weren't familiar with, I guess, what the defense was saying about it. Of course, the defense attorney in this case, Michael Harbin, I think he's an attorney out of Birmingham, Alabama, but he argued that out of that case and in Scalia's, Justice Scalia's opinion, he wrote the majority opinion in that case, he said the opinion was that Crawford versus Washington established or upheld a constitutional right for a defendant to confront the accuser. And, of course, in this case, there's not the accuser there to be confronted. And so he made the motion to dismiss the whole case based on it.
However, in this case, the young girl, Becca McAvoy, did testify in a grand jury hearing or preliminary hearing already, had she not?
She had, and my understanding is that she had testified twice before a grand jury, and according to what the family has told me, is she was going back to give a third statement to the grand jury when she was killed in that car accident. She had also given statements to investigators. In fact, one of the investigators who she gave a statement to, with the Saraland Police Department, he was in the courtroom yesterday as well with the family, but she'd given statements to investigators, she'd given statements to doctors, she'd given statements to counselors, the best of my understanding. There had also been a medical exam, which prosecutors say proved that Rebecca was indeed raped. But the key here is being able to link the rape to actually the rapist. And that's where I think prosecutors are having a problem right now.
The evidence in a case, and we all know in murder cases, in cases where victims are, mentally handicapped, cannot communicate on their own, are taken and brought before courts, and the evidence, the physical evidence, eyewitness testimony, statement evidence in some cases, speaks on behalf of the victim. In this case, the victim has spoken, but it's because of this law. And when I spoke to the family, and I'm sure when you spoke to the family, we talk about that pat way of explaining the system. You know, it's a good system. It's the best system we have. But it has to be so frustrating as a reporter to see the look in the eyes of the family and to know that they want help. I'm going to share with you just a little bit of an email that they sent to me. And it's very, very clear. It says, I'm just a housewife and a mom. Please help. I'm no lawyer. I'm having a hard time interpreting these words in the law. And, you know, to go through this tragedy is unbelievable. How do you as a reporter, Jessica, put aside your personal feelings and keep your reporter feelings in the front? Because this has got to be tough for you, too.
Well, you know, there are stories like that are, you know, hard to do that in all the time. You are confronted with that, you know, on probably a weekly basis. But it is important as a reporter to be objective. I wouldn't be doing the family any justice if I wasn't. Because right. As a reporter and as an objective reporter, I can then, and this is exactly what I did today, go and try to find everything I can find out about Crawford versus Washington, however it plays out. Whether it plays out in favor of the defense or whether it plays out in favor of prosecution, you know, my job is to be able to find as much information as I can. And I think that benefits the family. At least I hope it benefits a family in any case, for that matter. That if I can call back to them, or if I can do a story and they can watch it and maybe get an understanding one way or another of how it's going to work. And I'm hoping that's what we're going to do with Crawford versus Washington. I spent a lot of time on the phone today with, I'm not sure who you spoke with from California, but I spoke with a fella in the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office in California. He had done some seminars with district attorneys across the state of California on Crawford versus Washington. I called him today to find out his take on it, kind of gave him a brief synopsis of what was going on, and he gave me some very interesting information about it. I mean, he wasn't completely hopeless on this case. He said that it certainly established a right for defendants to confront the accuser or uphold that right, but there were some possibilities there that the judge could allow perhaps statements Rebecca made to the family. This, of course, is according to that Santa Clara assistant DA, but that perhaps family statements Rebecca made to the family could be allowed, perhaps statements she made to counselors if they were made in the context of perhaps a treatment or a healing process as opposed to an evidence gathering process. I think the key in this one, best I can tell and from everything that I'm gathering from sources that I'm talking to, is that it's going to be up to the judge to define what is a testimonial statement, and that's going to be key in this case.
If you're just joining us, WKRG CBS reporter Jessica Taloney is here, and we're continuing our investigation into the Becca McEvoy case. The source I spoke to just before you is Los Angeles County District Assistant District Attorney Robin Sachs, who specializes in these sex crimes investigations. In fact, that's all she does. And I'm going to send you a little email about her after the program. But she said the same thing. She didn't totally throw out all hope. This is, and I promised the other family that I wouldn't bring up their case or mention their name, but the real ironic thing here is that this isn't the only case. There's a second one that's happening too.
There sure is, and I've spoken with them as well. And what makes that even more interesting is that the district or the assistant district attorney that's prosecuting this case, he said that's what's kind of been the struggle all along, is that Mobile County has not, to the best of his recollection, has not seen any case like this prior to now. And all of a sudden you've got two cases that basically the children die within a month of each other. But prior to this, he says they've never had to jump this hurdle, and he calls it a big obstacle.
When you look at this case, and you have a working in a newsroom, you have a stack of cases, files that you're working on, I'm sure, and I think this is set aside now till the 22nd of April. How long, and it may be a difficult question for you to answer, but how long do you keep working on this story? Because I believe that this is a story that needs national attention, that this is something that the whole North America needs to see, the whole of North America, because this is a system question. Yes, an accused does have a right to confront their accuser, but there are also circumstances that where we have to protect the victim, and really, if we can't protect children, who can we protect?
Well, I tell you, Dan, I could see this case, no matter how the judge rules in it, I could see this case continuing to be appealed and go up and up and up, and perhaps even to the Supreme Court. And everybody that I've talked to about it kind of agrees on that, because part of Crawford versus Washington, the pieces of that haven't been tested would be the statements Rebecca made to the family. Is that admissible? Can that be a statement, you know, that's entered on her behalf? And the same with statements to counselors, as long as, of course, it's not a testimonial statement and it's in the treatment process and the healing process and the venting process. That's something that the Supreme Court still is going to have to deal with. And I was actually reading a LA Times article about it earlier this morning, and that's one of the things that article said, and I think it was written back in 2004 when the ruling came down, but it said that those are still pieces that will be tested and will likely be tested the next few years. Perhaps this is the case that tests it.
Well, it's certainly a story that I'm going to follow up on, and I'm sure you are, and I want to congratulate you on your fine reporting, and hopefully on the 22nd of April or after that, you and I can sit down and do another interview and report some good news in this case.
Thank you. Hopefully so. Hopefully we will.
Thank you, Jessica.
All right. Thank you, Dana.
Okay. Bye-bye. That's Jessica Taloney, WKRG CBS reporter. On the Becca McAvoy case, I sat down yesterday with some family and friends of Becca McAvoy and recorded the following interview. A little bit later on, one of the Scared Monkeys, Dan, will be here to talk about the recent Houston Travel Show and the reminding that Dan and his friends did there, the Scared Monkeys there, about our one happy island, Aruba. We need to do what we can for Becca McAvoy and the other little girl and all victims who can't speak for themselves, including Natalie Holloway. How important is that? Here's my interview with Rhonda Wheelis, Teresa Jordan, who are cousins of Becca McAvoy, and the person who brought this forward. A nice lady by the name of Cherry Simpson, a friend of the family. We sat down and recorded this yesterday. Okay, we're back. In this case that we're going to talk about here, there's actually two cases of young girls who were sexually assaulted and then lost their lives. This is so tragic. It is so sad. In one case, the family wasn't comfortable in coming on air, and I'll respect that. But in the other case, the family is here. We're here to talk to them. We're going to talk to someone else that's familiar with the case. And, of course, you've already heard from the CBS reporter Jessica Taloney about this case. I'm going to read a little bit from her story that's on WKRG.com News. It says, the family of a little girl who they say was raped by her stepfather is faced with another setback in court. A judge was supposed to decide on Wednesday whether there was enough evidence without 11-year-old Rebecca McAvoy's testimony to proceed with a rape case. Tragically, Rebecca was killed in a car crash in January while she was waiting for her trial to begin. This gets even more bizarre. Prosecutors were hoping to rely on Alabama law, which would allow statements she gave to investigators. Now, you got to remember this. She's already given statements and counselors to be admitted as evidence in place of her testimony. But the attorney for the defendant says a 2004 Supreme Court ruling, Crawford versus Washington, and you heard Jessica Taloney talk about that, established a constitutional right for a defendant to confront his accuser. That's nuts. You know, in this case, it's absolutely just heartbreaking, and we have to do what we can to get some national attention to this story. You have two little girls, both died, both were victims, and now there's a so-called ruling that says it's a constitutional right for a defendant to confront his accuser. What about the victim? Tonight we have Rhonda and Teresa, Rhonda Wheelis and Teresa Jordan, who are cousins to Rebecca McAvoy, and we have Cherry Simpson, who is a friend and who also went through a horrific situation with her own family. Rhonda, I'm going to start with you. You have to read this and see it to believe it. And the national media should have been all over this story because it's absolutely, well, yeah, and I'm not being disrespectful. It's crazy. This shouldn't be happening. The person that allegedly raped Rebecca should be in jail. Your thoughts?
Yes, well, we've been trying to get media attention to this case because pretty much they're telling us because he has the right to confront his accuser that this case may basically be dead in the water and not go forward. And it's crazy because she gave grand jury testimony already, and had the case went forward when it was supposed to, she would have been living, he would have been put behind bars. But because it kept getting set back and set back and set back, she's not here today, but she has testimony on tape, on video, and medical reports confirm everything that she said. This should be in itself enough to put this man behind bars. There are also other victims who are too afraid to come forward because he was a police officer.
And the man we're talking about, it is public knowledge, Bob Engel. He's charged with raping and sodomizing the 11-year-old late Rebecca McEvoy. Engel was a Chickasaw police officer when he was arrested in 2006. Teresa, Jordan, this law is nuts, for lack of a better term. This isn't something we should even be talking about in today's society. You have, in this case, there's two. Again, I'm respecting the wishes of one of the families not to talk about their case. But in this case, you have a little girl who lost her life in a traffic accident, who was scarred by this alleged rape and sodomy. And now all of a sudden, it's like she is being put on trial, and the system is being put on trial for the so-called rights of the accused. It's time for a law to be changed, and you've been working on that, have you not?
Yes. I'm trying to currently get a law passed that has to allow cases such as these to be heard, where the victim becomes deceased while awaiting trial, if there is substantial evidence, if there is a confession, whether that be a police statement or a video confession, and also medical evidence to back that up.
And this is, you know, we've talked about on my program before cases where mentally handicapped victims are sexually assaulted, elderly, in some cases, you know, those that are deaf who can't communicate. Of course, there are murder cases where the victim can't speak, and they look at the evidence. This law in Alabama and other places is just, it has to be so frustrating, Teresa, for your family. You were in court today, and as I mentioned, and as Jessica has reported, this has been delayed until the 22nd of April. How deflating is that? It has to be horrendous for you guys, what you've already gone through.
Yes, it's very disheartening, and also to think that our family has to endure even this much longer, even a couple of weeks. I mean, we've been through so much, and it's hard for us to even grieve our loved one, and we miss Rebecca terribly, and that she can't be here, and we're trying to be a voice for her. And just the fact that they keep putting things off as if it's just, you know, all these laws, they should have been researched by now. And when Rebecca was still alive, the case was put off twice, when she could have testified, and it was put off then. And so now they should have to hear it. They're the whole reason it didn't get heard when she was still alive.
Cherry Simpson, you sent me an email, and it said, and it caught my attention, and good for you for highlighting it that way, is that Jessica's law is not enough. And you know, on my program, I've been a proponent for Jessica's law. I've interviewed Mark Lunsford, Wendy Murphy, all sorts of prosecutors and people involved in the system who have pushed for mandatory minimum sentences. And this is something, in this case, that I would have never thought that we'd hear about. That drew you, when you heard about this case and the other, to contact me and other media organizations, and I hope they're listening, because I have contacted them too. But not only is this case upsetting to you, but you've gone through your own situation where you thought you have to try and do something to help.
Yes, and you do. You have, in this country, you have to fight for justice. And, you know, as a parent, any parent is a parent until they die. And we're our children's protectors. And we have to fight for them. And you have to also, I think, reach out to others that are suffering. It's one way that will help you get through what you suffered.
And it is so easy to sit on the other side of a microphone or to listen. But when you're involved personally, When your family is under attack, for lack of a better term, when the hurt continues on and on, Cherry, you've gone through this yourself with your own daughter. Share a little bit of that story with us and what compelled you to try and help with this situation.
Well, I told Rhonda earlier today that I am so impressed with her family because they
yes.
are doing this right out of the gate. What happened to my daughter happened 2 years ago, and we're still fighting. My daughter was brutally raped and beaten by her husband, and he pled guilty and plea bargained those down from 7 years to 3 years and 9 months. Of course, he didn't get that. And because the judge forgot to stamp on the piece of paper that came from the courtroom, truth in sentencing, he got 50% of his sentence instead of the 85 he should have gotten.
Wow.
And how I found this out is just by being diligent, by writing letters to everyone. I wrote the governors, I wrote the senators, I contacted everybody that I could contact, and that's how I collected all of this information. And what happened in Becca's case, I'd seen it on television, but on Saturday, an elderly woman came to my door and asked if we would help financially with Becca's fight, and it bothered me. And so I went online and I did some research and found out that I got a hold of Rhonda and found out that this woman was an estranged, well, Rhonda can probably tell you better, but, you know, it was a good thing, I think, that came from that happening, the bringing us together and helping one another. So
a red flag popped up and got you interested as far as, you know, what's the real story here, and I know there's been some conflicting reports about the lady that did come and pay you a visit, but I think that the important fact of this is right now, Rhonda, is the system. Now, it would be very simple for me to say, you know, Rhonda, I'm sure everything will work out fine, and then go and do what I do for the rest of my life, and you folks will have to sit there and probably not get a lot of sleep for a long time, because this is something that doesn't go away. You've had tragedy marked by tragedy, and it's continuing on with tragedy. I want to get your thoughts about the system, Rhonda, and the way that things are going. This little girl had to testify already. The information that I have is that she, you know, went through everything, and now here again, lawyers are trying to pull a rabbit out of a hat, and I know I'll take flack for that because they'll say that they're quoting case law, but this has to be disappointing for you as a family, and I talk to so many families that have to look at the system and say, no, it's not good enough, we have to do better.
Yes, we need to do better, and that's why we're trying to get this law passed, because, you know, our family is already been victimized, and we have went through a great tragedy, and now we're having to go through all this all over again. I mean, it's just a greater tragedy that's waiting to happen if this man walks, because countless other children are going to be messed with, and we just are not going to sit back idly and let this happen. This was our loved one, and we're not just going to take what they say. We are just gonna fight, because that's what Becca was doing. She was a little girl, and she was fighting the system to get justice so that this man could be put behind bars so no other little girl would ever have to go through what she endured for a year of her little life. And then after her death, the system's gonna try to say, oh, because he has the right to confront his accuser. Well, as far as I'm concerned, he doesn't have a right to confront his accuser. Her word that she said, the testimony, everything there, that should stand in her stead. She has already confronted him, and they're trying to pull this out to get a loophole through the system for him to go through, just for another pedophile to be released into our society for more children to have to endure this heartache. And we're just not going to sit back and allow this to happen.
You know, Teresa, just before I let you guys go, and again, I really appreciate you coming on, and we'll stay on top of the story, but you look like it, or it looks like there's been great coverage locally. Jessica Taloney, I'm seeing a report here by Leah Brennan. The local news organizations are on top of this. I will interview them also and bring them on the program to talk about it, but this would be so, it would be so much better if this could get a national audience, because it's a huge issue when we talk about rights and protecting children, Jessica's Law, etc. This is a big time case. This is so tragic. Again, two little girls, victims, they lose their lives, and then the person or persons that allegedly assaulted them, abused them, may get off because they're not here to answer questions. How crazy is that? Teresa, what would you like to see the media do right now? Cover this story more. What message do you have for us?
Well, I think that I just want to send the message that Rebecca was trying to send. And I believe that there is a message trying to be sent already through these two cases. I believe that there should be national attention. I believe that things need to be changed in our laws. I believe that, personally, that the Lord is trying to point out some errors in the law system. I would like the lawmakers and everybody that could to come forward if they know any laws to help this family. We need justice. Not only is Rebecca a victim, this man has several other victims as well, but their statements will not stand because they're older than 10 years old. And that is a problem in our case. This man is a pedophile and has been a pedophile for years. And just knowing that and knowing that he's walking around free, you know, it bothers us. And I believe that the media and every citizen here in the United States needs to, you know, we need to demand that there be tougher laws and that there be a law passed for victims such as these, such as Rebecca, that become deceased, that their evidence and their statements stand, and that law be more important than the law where he has the right to cross-examine the accuser.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this has been set aside till the 22nd of April, correct?
Yes.
Okay, what I will do, and for all three of you now, is to let you know that I would like to have you back on right after the 22nd of April to follow this up more. Cherry Simpson, Rhonda Wheelis, and Teresa Jordan, I really appreciate you coming on, and I will stay on top of the story, and please contact me when you need.
Okay, thank you so much.
And if you could just stay online, I'll talk to you in just a second. This is the Dana Prentzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. All right, I want to pledge to you that I'm going to follow the story the best I can. Becca McAvoy lost her life at the age of 11. 10 years old, sodomized, raped. Testified once, twice, three times, or on her way to testify again to a grand jury. Medical treatment examination for a 10-year-old. It just is so tragic to hear this story. It is so tragic to now see that the person who is accused of committing the crime against her may walk because of this law. Let's hope that we fight, that the courts look at it a little bit differently, something like Robin Sachs talked about, something like we all have talked about, something like WKRG CBS reporter Jessica Taloney talked about. And what I would like you guys to do is to also talk about it, because this is so important. This is a huge story, in my opinion, something that hasn't got national coverage. Get a hold of O'Reilly. Tell him to listen to this interview or give him some links. Get a hold of Greta. Get a hold of Nancy Grace. They're not covering this for some reason. There's some local coverage, but this is a big story. This is a 10-year-old little girl that can't come back, who was raped, who was killed on her way to testify to a grand jury. How many times does a child have to testify to a grand jury? We have to be able to protect our children. If we can't protect our children from pedophiles, then I don't know what else we can do. It's just, you know, I'm trying to I'm biting my bottom lip because this is a family show, and I don't want to cuss, but boy, I can think of a few words. And I can also hope and know that Becca McAvoy is in a better place, and that there is a place for the person who sodomized and raped her. Let's hope the courts can put him there. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with Dan, one of the Scared Monkeys, who was at the recent Houston Travel Show. You are listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. As I've done on other programs, I like to bring on some of the folks, the dedicated folks from Scared Monkeys, and just go to scaredmonkeys.com. You'll see the story that I'm talking about here at the recent Houston Travel Show, like in New York City, Boston, New Orleans, Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, Miami, St. Charles, and now Houston, Texas. A group of dedicated monkeys went there, and others, to remind folks at this travel show that Aruba, that, what do we call that, that happy little island, maybe not be as safe as all think. And that, I'm looking at some pictures here, that no justice for Natalie means no tourism for Aruba. I thought I'd bring on Dan, who was one of the monkeys that was there, to talk about it. Welcome to the show, sir.
Howdy, how y'all doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm always flabbergasted when I see the dedication of everyone involved. Like I say, 99.9% of those that have followed this case for as long as we have, especially the folks at Scared Monkeys and others, who put their own selves on the line to go to these travel shows and to remind people that there is still a missing girl, and there is no answers. Well, we can get into the answers that we know, but there's been no justice, I guess, and justice comes in many forms, and one of the forms of justice that's best is answers for the family and to bring Natalie home. Tell us about the Houston Travel Show, sir.
Well, you know, the same two people really have been organizing, at
yes.
least two that I know of, have been organizing all of these protests.
Yep.
That being Vicky and Richard, who you may know.
You bet, yep.
And they just, I've been in contact with them for, well, with Richard for a long, long time, pretty much almost since I became involved with Natalie's disappearance and her family. And she said, hey, I've got some people together. We know this travel show is going to happen. We know Aruba is going to be there. How would you like to get with them and go down there and protest? And I said, I mean, I have no excuse not to. Houston's 90 minutes away from me.
When
I was more than happy to, you know, do that.
When you get there, obviously, there's got to be a bit of anxiety. The Arubans aren't happy with any of us, myself included. They don't like freedom of speech. They don't like people voicing their opinions and thoughts and keeping the story alive, for lack of a better term, and reminding the people that this family and this young girl still deserve, I hate using the term closure, but I'm going to use it in this case. What kind of reception did you get while you were there?
Well, from the general public, the people that we were handing out flyers to, it was amazingly supportive. I mean, everyone was, I mean, so many people saw just our T-shirts, our signs, gave us a thumbs up and said, I support you, I'm there, I agree. And people would make a beeline for us across the sidewalk and come right up to us and talk to us even. And there was just so much outpouring of support for us and for Natalie's family and for justice.
And that part is so important, and I think you said it well as far as justice goes. Did you have any problems or any fallback from the people from Aruba that were there?
No, they pretty much avoided us like the plague. there was one gentleman who I believe was an American. He didn't have an accent. Who was, I think, working with them at their booth, probably just a travel agent. He came out, chatted with us, took our pictures. He was friendly enough, but he was only out there for a few minutes. Otherwise, they seemed to avoid us. They would pretty much come out of the building and clap their hands over their name tag and kind of hug the far wall and not make eye contact with us. We could tell who they were.
This case is so important to everyone because we obviously support the family, but it's also so important that answers be given. This isn't something in the criticism that's come forward about these protests is that those that are protesting, those that report on the protest, are saying that everyone in Aruba is bad. We're not saying that at all. We're saying that there's no justice for Natalie, no tourism or no respect, I guess, for Aruba. It's just that simple. What can be done? Who can step up so that the next time there's a travel show, we won't be there?
Well, honestly, yeah, I have a little bit of a different outlook than a lot of people and a lot of people I protest with. I honestly told, this is what I did. When I talk to people at the travel show and they talk to me about the boycott, I said, unfortunately, Aruba's own government has only left us with this one thing.
Right.
You know, the very beginning of, you know, when Natalie first disappeared, there were a lot of things they could have done and should have done.
Yep.
And on a small island like that, you can't tell me that they could not have leaned on the police and made sure certain things worked a little bit better.
Absolutely.
And they have dragged their feet again and again, and the worst thing they can possibly find to do it, and they just take it and run with it.
Yeah.
And really, the Aruban people need to realize that as long as the MEP party is in charge, they've got problems from us.
Yep.
As Americans.
Yep.
It's time for a change of guard, I believe.
I don't think that you're far off as far as what others have thought. Obviously, the current powers to be or powers that be or whatever that you want to call them just haven't done the job that they should be doing, and somebody has to step up and do something. You folks are doing a fine job. You're stepping up. You're reminding the people. The folks as Scared Monkeys are keeping the story alive, and hopefully we'll be able to get some closure for them soon. Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, too.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Again, it's just so simple. You're going to investigate the case properly, file charges, bring it to court if there's evidence to prove, bring Natalie home to her parents. We can rehash this 1,000 times over and over, and whether you love it or you hate it, the folks that go to these travel shows and protest, I say they go to the travel shows and educate, certainly have a right to do that. My name is Dana Pretzer. I want to thank you for listening tonight and remind you that our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can listen to podcasts of past shows, listen to my daily commentary, leave comments, whatever. Thank you all. We'll see you again real soon. Good night.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.